I've been getting messages every day of somebody passing away, especially from my family and friends and loved ones.
Indian Americans fight COVID from afar. It's Tuesday, May 11th. This is VOA Asia. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. Find us online at VOA Asia Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, and YouTube. Also ahead, Pakistani female journalists break barriers. Religious leaders urge vaccine faith. Predicting volcanic eruptions. Student journalists. And a blessing for bicycles. It's all on today's VOA Asia. India's daily COVID statistics are down slightly, but they remain high. The health ministry said Monday there were 366,161 new infections and 3,754 deaths caused by the coronavirus in the previous 24-hour period. Public health experts say they believe the new cases and deaths are undercounted. India has 22.6 million COVID cases so far, according to the Johns Hopkins Coronavirus Resource Center. Only the United States has more infections, accounting for nearly 33 million of the world's more than 158 million COVID cases, according to the center. The highly infectious coronavirus variant, first identified in India, is reported to have been detected in Bangladesh, France, Thailand, the UK, and the US state of Connecticut. There is growing concern in India about a fungal infection affecting COVID patients and people who have recovered from the disease. Meanwhile, in neighboring Nepal, also struggling to combat an outbreak of the pandemic, is running short of oxygen and oxygen tanks. The Himalayan country has asked Mount Everest climbers and guides not to abandon their oxygen cylinders on the mountain and instead bring them back down so that medical facilities can fill them to give them to COVID patients. As the number of COVID cases in India rise and overwhelm the healthcare system, many from the country now living in the United States have watched helplessly as friends and family grapple with the virus. Now, as VOA's Kane Faribault reports, some in the Midwestern state of Illinois are mobilizing to help from a distance.
Every morning, just checking the internet for the latest news from India is a dismal ritual for entrepreneur Anil Joshi.
In my own family, my cousin's family actually have all four family members got infected. A childhood friend of mine died, actually.
In recent weeks, seven members of Ashfaq Syed's extended family in the Indian city of Hyderabad have contracted the virus. He says all seven have since passed away.
It is going crazy, I can say. And I've been getting messages every day of somebody passing away, especially from my family and friends and loved ones.
Anil Joshi's company, IntelliH, is developing technology that would allow India's medical professionals to remotely assess and monitor patients. He has a team of 35 employees in India advancing the project, but the virus is slowing down their work.
In our own group, in the last 3 weeks, we have four people who are actually infected and not able to work because their mom or dad got them first. And obviously, Indian families are very closely knit family. They live together.
Joshi and Syed are among many trying to answer India's call for help.
People need oxygen supply there. People need medicines like remdesivir and others.
We need ventilators because some of my friends requested us to arrange some ventilators, donations and all those things.
While there are logistical challenges in collecting and shipping equipment to India, Syed says sending money has provided immediate assistance.
Oxygen, the ox cylinder, it used to be 2,000 Indian rupees earlier. Now it has shoot up to 20,000, 30,000. So because of, you know, shortage of oxygen, so we need to arrange some funds.
South Asian communities throughout Illinois are joining the effort.
Can I have your name, please?
Sajjad Bhatti is from India's neighboring country of Pakistan. He runs a restaurant in the Chicago suburb of Naperville and has barely survived the financial hardship created by COVID lockdowns in the U.S. While his own family in Pakistan is healthy and, so far, safe from the virus, his heart goes out to those in India who are suffering.
It doesn't matter if they're Muslim, Hindu, whatever, they are praying for all the India. In our mosque, in our churches, everywhere they're praying for India.
Even though his business hasn't returned to normal, Bhatti is helping Syed raise about $10,000 to buy medical supplies in India. He sees it as a goodwill gesture between peoples of two estranged nations.
anybody in India, they're their brothers too. It is the biggest opportunity, and we hope it's, we're going to build a bridge and everything will calm down in our region.
Outreach that is needed in India, where COVID-19 is taking a horrific toll. Cain Fairbaugh, VOA News, Naperville, Illinois.
These are among some of the top Asia headlines you'll find right now when you visit voanews.com. South Korean president pledges to restore dialogue with North Korea. Indonesian police arrest Papuan independence figure on treason charges. Malaysia's state-owned investment fund, X-Unit, sued to recoup billions. Can Taiwan's silicon shield protect it against China's aggression? China turns to naturalized players to save World Cup hopes. Expanded coverage of all these stories and so much more can be found daily when you visit Facebook at VOA Asia, Instagram, and Twitter. We also invite you to stop by the voanews.com website. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. Let's continue with VOA Asia. Female journalists are regularly seen on camera in Pakistan, but the job can bring many challenges. Umair Farooq from VOA Peshawar meets two women pushing back the barriers. Bejan Hamdard narrates the story.
When she started out in journalism, Farzana Ali from Pakistan's conservative Dera Ismail Khan district in Khyber Pakhtunkhwa was told women don't belong in the profession. But she pushed back and is now the first female bureau chief of Aaj News in Peshawar, the province's capital.
In the beginning, I was told, men don't do the kind of things you are doing, or even men don't dare say no to us. Who was I to say no to them? Well, look, I'm not a thing. I am a journalist, and it is my job to convey information to the people.
The 20-year news veteran says women were not allowed to cover politics, terrorism, and other big issues. But she stepped up to take on those beats. Now, as bureau chief, a top worry is the safety of her team, especially in districts with extremism and terrorism.
If it seems to us that our lives will be in trouble, mine, my reporters, anyone working with me, especially those working in merged districts, then we advise them to report only that news that would not risk their lives. That is why many issues go unreported.
Other female journalists say whatever the subject, reporting from the field can be more difficult for female journalists.
When I go in the field to report, people harass me, calling me names and staring at me. The way they stare makes you feel uncomfortable. I am sitting here like this, but in the field, I cover myself in a shawl.
But in some cases, Ali says being a female journalist actually helps give depth to their reporting, especially on women's issues.
You get access to the original stories. If a man goes, he will talk to men only. A male reporter will never tell the negative side of the story about a woman's issues. I, on the other hand, would bring what a woman really has to say.
In Pakistan, one challenge exists for all journalists in the country: access to information.
It's said that we have freedom of expression in Pakistan. Everyone can say what is on their mind, but I'm not ready to accept that. You don't have access to information, you don't have access to areas, so where is the freedom of expression and where is the freedom of press?
Still, these journalists vow to keep pushing to fully cover the issues that affect their communities. For Umair Farooq in Peshawar, Pakistan, Bejan Hamdard, VOA News.
Happening now in Asia, International Olympic Committee President Thomas Bach has canceled a trip to Japan because of surging COVID-19 cases in the country. The Tokyo Olympic Organizing Committee made the announcement in a statement. Stay up to date with VOA. You're listening to VOA Asia. It's nice to have you with us today on VOA Asia. Thanks for beginning your day with us. With an estimated one-third of the U.S. population hesitant to get a vaccine for COVID-19, a new study indicates that approaches by faith community leaders can help convince people to get the shot. VOA's Laurel Bowman reported from a church in Washington, D.C., which was the site of the city's first reported COVID-19 case.
Christchurch Georgetown is one of the oldest churches in Washington. It's also where COVID-19 arrived, when the Reverend Timothy Cole became the city's first coronavirus patient. It earned him a new nickname.
Patient Zero, which is a name that it's going to take a bit of living down, I think.
The Christian understanding of love.
Cole has been vaccinated, and so has nearly everyone in church this day. He's urged his parishioners to get the shot for their own health and for the welfare of others. And he's happy for more faith leaders to do the same.
I think there were good things that came out of me catching COVID, and it certainly alerted this community very early to the risks of it, and perhaps this community benefited in the long run by being, you know, very quick to react.
The Lord be with you.
On the Sunday prior to Rector Tim Cole being admitted to the hospital for COVID-19, he helped give communion to hundreds of congregants here at Christ Church. It was a wake-up call for the community.
I happen to have been a parishioner here at the service, the last service that Tim presented before he was diagnosed with COVID-19. That experience made us become very aware and made us, I would say, much more cautious and aware of what we should be doing and not doing.
A recent survey of Americans indicated one-third of them would look to a religious leader when deciding whether to get a COVID-19 vaccine. And over half say getting vaccinated is a way to make good on the aspiration of loving one's neighbor.
People who are more hesitant, particularly in white evangelical Protestant and black Protestant groups, indicate that religious appeals would work for them, that, you know, these things could help get them across the line from being vaccine hesitant to actually getting the vaccine.
Now that we're closing in on what's hopefully the end of this experience, I think that people in the pulpit, right, people in the pulpits, be it in churches or mosques or synagogues, can really help their parishioners and their communities, you know, understand the importance of getting vaccinated and really taking it seriously.
Vaccines are now freely available for all people living in the United States who are at least 16 years old. The CDC says at least 30% of the population has been vaccinated so far. Laurel Bowman, VOA News, Washington.
You may read and see more on this story at our Facebook page at VOA Asia. Stay with VOA Asia. Coming up, predicting volcanic eruptions.
VOA Asia is on Twitter. Follow us at VOA Asia for developing stories in Asia, perhaps close to you. Our Twitter feed also has updates on programs you can hear and see with links to find them easily. With VOA Asia, you can also follow radio program hosts VOA Stevenson and VOA Melman. VOA Asia Twitter. We're always online for you.
This news from VOA Asia. Myanmar's detained leader Aung San Suu Kyi is expected to appear in person at her next court hearing and meet her legal team there face-to-face for the first time, the head of her defense team said after months of court hearings conducted via video conferencing. You'll find this and all the big stories through the day on VOA Asia Twitter and Facebook. This is VOA Asia. VOA Asia continues. Experts say this has already been a busy year for volcanic activity, especially in several parts of Asia along the so-called Ring of Fire. Now, NASA scientists say they may be able to predict eruptions far enough in advance to help save lives. VOA's Arash Arabasadi has developments.
Lava flows down a side of Guatemala's Pacaya volcano. Local relief groups say for now the lava doesn't appear headed for nearby communities, but that could change if it switches direction. University of Alaska researcher Tarsilo Garona is lead author on a report studying satellite data as a means of detecting future volcanic activity.
So the key point of this research is that we can, in principle, use these signs of heat, of the release of heat that we observe at the surface of volcanoes. We can use that information to better anticipate volcanic activity.
NASA scientists studied 16 years of radiant heat with instruments on board satellites. They found in the years leading up to an eruption, the radiant surface temperature over much of a volcano would increase by about 1 degree Celsius.
One of our main goals, main tasks, is to monitor volcanoes in real time. So incorporating this new methodology, that means that we are going to provide a lot of extra information that we can use to better understand the activity of active volcanoes and to better anticipate these eruptions.
Garona says by adding new tools for detection, researchers can predict months or even years before a volcano erupts.
So we basically combine all the different methodologies to better understand what's going on in the subsurface and also to provide forecasts of the activity. It's not always, it's not in general straightforward to make those forecasts, but yes, with new methodologies and incorporating new data sets, we are getting closer to our more robust forecasting of volcanic eruptions.
21 communities surround the erupting Pacaya volcano alone. Every Wednesday in April, devotees make a pilgrimage there to pray at the lava, sprinkling holy water and seeking divine intervention in stopping the flow. Garona says with more robust data gathering, science can warn communities like this one before the next major eruption ever happens. Arash Sherbasadi, VOA News.
Making headlines in Asia, a North Korean defector and anti-North Korea activist was questioned by South Korean police over a law that prohibits activists from sending anti-North Korea leaflets over the border. Stay up to date with VOA. You're listening to VOA Asia. Now on VOA Asia, student journalists across 23 campuses of California State University have played a crucial role in keeping other students informed during the COVID pandemic. VOA's Mike O'Sullivan reports the student newsrooms are now linked through an online newswire, pooling resources and sharing information across the expansive state.
With 485,000 students, this is the largest public university system in the United States. Since the start of the COVID pandemic and remote classes, students have been eager for news, especially news that affects California State University or the CSU system. Student journalists provide it.
Whether that's Board of Trustees, whether that's Campus Presidents, whether that's student organizations, it's difficult for them to really see what's happening across the CSU. Because yes, they can go online to each of the individual CSU student papers and try to find stories there.
But there was no single source. So while in his final year at California Polytechnic State University, San Luis Obispo, Aiden McGloin decided to share campus news. And with other Cal State students, created the Student Newswire. Student journalists meet in a chat room on the internet platform Slack and share stories through the self-publishing site Substack. The Student Newswire covered recent protests by Asian Americans and Pacific Islanders after a series of racially based attacks.
Not everybody is in, you know, these major cities that are having these large protests. And with San Francisco, there's always something going on.
Students at Cal State Dominguez Hills in suburban Los Angeles cover events on and off campus.
So a lot of our big, hard-hitting news stories have been in regards to racial reconciliation, updates on COVID protocols, construction happening on campus, and how the campus is helping students with the virtual and distance learning environment.
And when stories are of wider interest, they're shared. One recent graduate who still helps out with her student newspaper says newsrooms need diverse perspectives, but...
Don't hire me just because Black Lives Matter is happening in the summer and you don't have a black journalist to cover it. Hire me, you know, maybe you do want that black perspective, but also respect that I also want to talk about things that aren't about trauma or police brutality or something like that.
Student reporters offer coverage not found elsewhere, says a faculty advisor.
You're not going to see this in the LA Times. You're not going to see this in the San Diego Union Tribune. You're not going to see this in the Bakersfield Californian. We have original content that can't be duplicated anyplace else.
Student journalists point out the reporting process is the same on college campuses.
Student journalists are kind of looked down on or not considered as legitimate, but we're out here telling the stories, a lot of the same stories. But what makes us really special and what sets us apart is that we are dedicated to telling the stories of campus.
And sharing them, providing news in a time of isolation. Mike O'Sullivan, VOA News, Los Angeles.
The blessing of the bicycles at the Cathedral Church of St. John the Divine is a popular tradition in New York City. Last year it was held virtually due to the pandemic, but this year the event was back, and many returned with the bicycles they relied on to get through a difficult year. Anna Nelson has their story, narrated by Anna Rice.
Among many unusual New York rituals, this might stand out due to its longevity. For the past 23 years, in early May, hundreds of bikers cycled to the Cathedral Church of St. John the Divine in New York City to have their bicycles blessed. Even pets come along.
She just loves to go in Central Park, and when I'm getting ready to get on my bike, she looks at me really anxiously, wondering if she's going to go too, and is very excited to get on the bike.
Glenn Goldstein started this unusual tradition. Not religious himself, Goldstein is an avid biker who got the idea from his mother.
Many years ago, my mother sent me a newspaper article about a blessing of the motorcycles at a shrine. And like all good sons, I took that article and threw it away. And many years later, I thought, this is not a bad idea. And so I came here to this wonderful cathedral and said, can I ask you a question? I was very embarrassed. I thought they would not like this, but they were very nice and welcoming. And we've been doing it for 23 years now. This is the 23rd year.
As for the purpose of the ceremony, Goldstein says he likes to think this blessing might keep him and many others a little safer.
But the church is beautiful, and they're very nice to do this, and it's a nice thing to do. I think it's just a lovely ceremony.
Do I believe it helps? Amen. You gotta have faith. And you gotta, all the help you can get, and it doesn't hurt, that's for sure.
As the pandemic worsened, many New Yorkers saw bikes as one of the safest means of transportation in this hard-hit city. Even the church priests admit they haven't taken the subway in more than a year.
At a time during this past year when we were all huddled in our homes in abject fear, and I don't know how many of you are actually from the city, but we were all so afraid to go out. And these brave people, many of whom are immigrants to this country, many of whom are not documented immigrants to this country, they went out on their bicycles so we would have something to eat when we were all afraid, huddled in our homes. And so the people on the bicycles really, in many ways, made life possible for us during the pandemic.
Each year, roughly 2 bicyclists a day are killed in accidents on U.S. roadways. Bikes painted white often appear as memorials at the sites where bicyclists have been killed.
Pedro Lopez, 41, Brooklyn.
Thaddeus Chakowski, 61, Brooklyn. Zudi Dasi, 79, Staten Island.
I think the ghost bike, it's a good cautionary tale for all of us, seeing a bike there, and it's also a way to remember that a poor soul, lost his or her life doing what they liked or even just going about their daily business.
I think it's tragic and it's sad, but it's good to have a memorial for people to realize that it is dangerous with cars and bicycles, like, sharing the same roads, and for people to be aware, like, how easy it is for cyclists to get injured when you have 1,000-pound vehicles riding next to them.
They come once a year to have their bikes blessed. Then they're off again, ready for another season of pedaling on city streets. For Anna Nelson in New York, Anna Rice, VOA News.
We're parking our bikes for the day. Thanks for joining us on VOA Asia. We'll return tomorrow at the same time. And in the meantime, you can join us online. We're at Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, and YouTube. We're always glad to have you join us, and we thank our team that helps bring you the program. Service Chief Diane Gao, Ira Melman, Doug Bernard, Keith Lane, and Amy Hybels. I'm Jim Stevenson. We're in Washington. We hope you have a wonderful day ahead. Be safe. Be well.